the way businesses are operating now are highly digitalized, and without those modern, robust cyber defenses in place, the weak underbelly is really being found.
Hello and welcome to Identity Today. We're taking the noise out of tech talk, bringing together the best minds in the business to chat all things identity, security, biometrics and more. I'm your host, Blair Crawford. Today in the show, I'm joined by Michael Warnock, Commercial Director at Daltrey. Today, we're talking about the current cybersecurity landscape. I hope you enjoy the chat.
I think it might be worthwhile to take 1 minute to discuss security.
Michael, welcome to the show. Great to have you on.
Thanks, Blake. Great to be with you. Hope you're enjoying London.
I am certainly enjoying London. So for those who don't know, Michael Warnock on the show with us today. He is the commercial director of Daltrey, and he's one of the faces which has been talking about our proposition and market for the last few years. Got him on today to talk about the security landscape and how he's seen biometrics evolve over the last couple of years since he has been with Daltrey as the commercial director. But for those who don't know him, we're going to do that quick fire round. So Michael, so that people can break the ice with you, for those who do not know what you're all about, here come the questions. When you're travelling, what is the food that you miss the most? From home, I mean.
It's got to be a barbecue locally, some great Australian steak. Not always easy to get around the world, but I enjoy the outdoor lifestyle and always looking forward to getting home to put something onto the barbecue.
Every time I go back to Scotland, people, the first thing when they talk about barbecues, they always say, you know, put a shrimp on the barbie. That's not what we say in Australia. It's prawns on the barbecue. I don't think we've ever said shrimps on the barbie, have we? Or is that something from the olden days?
There was an advertising campaign Paul Hogan did, I think, late 80s, early 90s, where he had a mixture of prawn or shrimp on the barbie. I think they tilted that depending on what audience they were trying to attract visitors from. But a pretty famous saying.
So tell everyone, where do you get your security news from?
I think there's an array of outlets. The thing that's definitely changed in the industry in the last couple of years is the amount of information we can absorb. So publications like IT News, AFR, definitely the Biometric Institute updates, they're all relevant for our area of focus. Peer important news, talking to your peers in the industry, getting their insights as to what they're seeing as well. So it's a mixture of digital and in-person channels I use.
And what is your guilty pleasure?
If you ask my children, it's always when the chocolate box opens, if anyone touches the Turkish Delight, then they're in trouble. So Turkish Delight is my favorite go-to. Maybe a G&T late in the evening as well.
Spy name, what would it be if you had one?
Football fan, so Wild Panther would be my spy name. For those of you outside of Australia, Penrith Panthers is a National Rugby League team, so they're in the grand final this weekend. So Wild Panther would be my spy name, I'd say.
I'm not sure if Wild Panther is most I don't know if I expected that as a spy name. It's not the most conventional spy name. It might be related to the final question though. If you were a wrestler potentially called the Wild Panther, what would your entrance song be?
It's got to be Mr. Brightside by The Killers.
Fantastic. We won't ask for a rendition today. All right, so let's get into the topic. Now, everybody, including me, you've got a little bit more information on you. we're going to talk about the cybersecurity landscape. I think the best way to set the scene, though, would be to give some perspective on your background. The work you're doing with all of the team at Daltrey, and I think also how you got into the cybersecurity industry in the first place.
Yeah, look, I've been very lucky. I've got 30 or so years experience across the IT sector, if I describe it that way. That's given me the chance to work in Australia, but also across international markets, predominantly in sales, chief revenue, business generation type roles. Cybersecurity, particularly about 10 years ago when I exited out of a large telco here in Australia, I actually found myself at the end of that that tenure talking more about cybersecurity than I was about data networks and connectivity. So that certainly opened my eyes up to the world of cybersecurity. Found an opportunity with an organization, an Australian startup at the time, to jump into that, and have enjoyed that career ever since. Worked for local organizations, again, worked for multinationals in the cyber sector as well. Predominantly with Daltrey, 2.5 years or so ago we joined. My role as commercial director ultimately is about increasing our market acquisition for both customer and partner, and ultimately, as I see it, being a bit of an evangelist into the market space. The technology we have is innovative for some of our markets. It's a new approach to the way that they're defending their organization against cyber risk. So there's an evangelist type role in what I do as well. So very much a people person. Enjoy being out talking to organizations about their current state, future state, how they want to get there, and that's really my role. How do we take them on that journey?
So we know that, you know, obviously when we started this business and you were there from very early in the journey, that identity was becoming the new perimeter, especially as we looked at the modern workplace and people getting to work from where they wanted as opposed to where companies needed them to work. And the escalation in cyber attacks has hit an all-time high. And even if we look at the recent weeks or past week's activity, as numerous large enterprises have been breached. I mean, what are your observations of the current threat landscape? And what are you seeing in market from customers?
There's been a dramatic shift, as you touched on, the last two and a half years through COVID and post-COVID. That rapid move to work anywhere, anytime, any device really changed a couple of things. It changed the landscape. So if I'm the CIO, if I'm the CISO of the organization, the head of risk, literally overnight, how I needed to defend my organization was turned on its head. Identity, as we know, or the virtual front door, as I describe it, was ultimately where organizations needed to start. Anyone's on a zero trust journey, they know that identity is the first step in that fabric. So the major change straight away, yeah, as you said, how do we defend the new way of working? And people are coming across any app, any device, so how do we secure that? The other factor around that was from an Australian perspective, the landscape, as we talk more on a geopolitical level, we definitely have seen us become a target for international adversaries. And they're the major changes there, the drivers around that. Identity traditionally also had been username, password, one-time PIN, and we certainly see through various publications 60-80% of cyber risk still emanates from weak or stolen credentials. So there's an aggressive risk element out there. There has been traditional approaches to the way identity has been used, and from a Daltrey perspective, that presents us with a great opportunity to be able to bring a modernised approach to the way enterprise and government are defending their critical assets.
It seems fairly intense in the last couple of weeks. We've had Uber, American Airlines, we've had the GTA 6 development team at Rockstar, and then obviously right on our doorstep, the evolving story as it relates to Optus. Is this, like, to me, it feels a little bit like, well, it was obvious this was coming, but it's almost like it's been turned on in a very extreme manner in the last couple of weeks because of the high profile breaches which we've seen. What are your thoughts on whether this was an inevitability or whether this is something which is unique to the current landscape in the very, very immediate term?
In the immediate term, I think it's an inevitability, really. It's a wake-up call to these organisations to ensure that they've got the policies, the practices, and the people really ready to be able to deal with these situations. Unfortunately, as we're seeing in some of those examples, the basics haven't been adhered to, and unfortunately the bad guys get really clever at finding out who's got weak cyber defenses, and whether it be for ransomware monetization or just to simply take capabilities off the air, they'll go after those weak assets. So for me, yeah, absolutely a wake-up call, an inevitability of the digitalization of the way we do business, and it comes back to that post-COVID way of working. The way businesses are operating now are highly digitalized, and without those modern, robust cyber defences in place, the weak underbelly is really being found. Unfortunately, we're still seeing in many of those situations, the root cause is username, password, weak stolen credentials, phishing attacks, etc. And then once somebody's into the organisation, they're able to create new profiles, move laterally across the business, and wreak some harm. So they're the major changes I see at the moment. It's also important, though, against the backdrop, to identify that there is no such thing as an impenetrable wall. So you can't ultimately defend against every cyber risk. There isn't an infinite amount of budget, et cetera, available. So you've got to be quite selective. But again, what I'm seeing in a number of these recent attacks is that the basics just haven't been adopted. And the bad guys get very good at very quickly working out who's an attacker.
We've spoken about recently, but it's definitely one of the things that we see our customers discussing more frequently, is about making sure that those basics and those highly targeted vulnerabilities like weak credentials, we can try and tick the boxes on those attack vectors as quickly as possible, so that the more sophisticated attacks, budget can be dedicated towards protecting against them. I think one of the things that we're starting to see is that, especially from a remediation perspective and a reputation perspective, the nature of the attack is really, really important in terms of an organization's ability to deal with it. If you get hacked because you were really lackadaisical with something which should never have been a vulnerability, versus whether you have been breached because of something which was the result of 1,000 engineers being deployed against your organization, those are very, very different propositions. It gets me onto the point about, you know, critical national infrastructure and the conversations we've been having with our customers around, or the market more generally speaking, around how they can ready themselves to be protected against those who want to disrupt our society and the way that we go about our day-to-day. I mean, in terms of CNI, what are you seeing? And how is the behaviour changing right now, you know, from 5 years ago to today?
There's a couple of things to unpack there. The first comment I'd make would be the role that government is playing, not only here in Australia, but in other jurisdictions. So if you have a look at the critical national infrastructure bill changes that the Australian government have brought in, and the onus, in essence, on those CNI operators to really step up and enhance their cyber controls, to a point where if a member of the CNI sector has a breach, then government can actually come in and run that operation and take over control of that until they get that fixed. So government's definitely playing a role. We also see that with the white papers, etc., from Biden administration in the US as well, in regards to security control. So number one, government's playing a more active role in creating compliance, regulatory best practice frameworks. From the operator's perspective, again, wake-up calls, you look at the Colonial Pipeline attack as an example. Here is a critical piece of infrastructure supplying millions of people with fresh water that's taken off the air. So there are attacks that are happening in different parts of the world that these organisations need to be aware of. You're exactly right. You can't defend against everything. You've got to get the basics right. So here in Australia, obviously, the ASD Essential Aid is a strong framework for the hygiene, getting the basics right. Then ultimately, it's the company's ability to react if they are breached. And it'll be very interesting, obviously, with the recent telco breach here with Optus in Australia. The attacks happened. Okay, where are we at? How do we remediate? How do we move forward? How do we actually rebuild trust, which ultimately is one of those downstream outcomes that comes from any cyber attack, the loss of trust. Do I want to give my credentials, my personal information, across to that organisation going forward? And that's one of the biggest factors. The media attention around cyber breach has never been as large as it is now. If I roll back 5 years ago, you had to go into page 5, page 10 of publications like the Australian Financial Review to read anything about cyber security. I'm pretty sure if you pick up the paper today, the first 10 pages are full of cybersecurity related articles. So the media attention, the focus has definitely changed, and therefore that's driving what I hope to be a change in behavior.
one of the phrases that you've coined, and which we're using because it's now in front of all of our t-shirts as we go into the marketplace, is that hackers don't hack, they log in. And it's touching on this idea that weak credentials are so exploited at the moment that it isn't actually that difficult for those who want to do harm to do it. When you look back on, I suppose, that proposition from when you started in the business and started playing with biometrics in terms of a genuine cybersecurity capability to where you're at now, you know, what are your observations? Because, correct me if I'm wrong, you hadn't worked with biometrics before you started Daltrey. Really keen to understand what you're seeing as the major differences as you went through your own journey.
Yeah, you are right. So, no, biometrics was new. It obviously had an extensive background in identity in general, but the biometric aspect was new. I think, again, roll back a couple of years ago, that biometrics to many was seen as something that was on a sci-fi movie or in the future. It's definitely become front and center now. It's become a way of life. You have to think about it. Every day we're using some form of biometrics in our own life, whether it be to unlock a phone or unlock a computer or be able to prove ultimately who we are. So the market understanding and the adoption of biometrics is rapidly driving forward. From a Daltrey perspective, obviously our approach around that to give comfort to the market around not only the performance of the biometric to ensure it's recognizing the person in front of the camera or on the device is the security and the privacy controls that go around that as well. So definitely seeing a significant change in the conversation. People, as you said, recognize that the traditional approach to securing credentials is weak, and it doesn't secure this digital world that we're now in, and therefore there is a requirement to really have a think about how we do that differently. So a lot of the conversation we have with our organizations is around, again, we see ourselves as a cybersecurity company first who has a digital identity platform. That's ultimately how I position us in market, and that's where the market needs that comfort. The technology we have does provide some fantastic security features, but organizations want to ensure, first of all, that we've got those robust security controls.
Looking forward into 2023, I think it's a fair bet to say the threat environment will continue to be threatening. How do you see things changing? Or is it more about more and more organizations recognizing that it's time to commit budget to cybersecurity in a really meaningful way?
The attack vectors are not going to diminish in any way. Absolutely. They're only going to increase. If there's money to be made, people will go chasing that money. So 2023, I see a continued increase in ransomware style attacks. Digitalization of products and services driven through the need to operate in a post-COVID world will continue to provide the bad guys with a platform that they can find weak points of entry. And from the flip side, customers, staff, subcontractors, etc., they're operating in a way now that they work anywhere. So they also want to have the flexibility to be able to access what they need to do to get their jobs done as well. So you've got another spectrum there as well, this notion of securing the organization, but I've also got to make sure that my access and my authentication is again, coin the phrase, frictionless. So you've got this drive from staff, subcontractors, customers of saying, okay, if you want me to use this way of authenticating, it needs to be easy for me to use. And we've all had frustrations in our own lives around traditional forms of MFA. So there's a couple of vectors there. If I sort of unpack that, yeah, absolutely. There's going to be a continued increase in cyber attack. Ensure that the investments, policies, procedures, etc., are in place. The ability to recognize an attack, the ability to respond and remediate. And again, we're seeing that now with these major breaches this year. But also the adoption of technologies, an important aspect as well. You've got to make sure that if you do put a different control in place, you're able to take the the user on the journey. As we know, if they don't adopt the technology, they find ways to go around it, which ultimately diminishes the return on the investment of what you're trying to do. And again, as Australia in particular continues to play a role in the geopolitical area through the likes of the Quad and AUKUS, etc., we're going to continue to be in the eyes of the bad guys. I remember a few years ago I was speaking at a law institute event in Tasmania, and somebody said, why would a bad guy come after us? We're a long way away from anywhere else in the world, and this notion of geography is no longer a defense. I think that's a really important thing, for particularly here in Australia, that we are on a connected world. We're no longer protected by geography.
So you just prompted me in a couple of things you said there about, I suppose, touching on the holistic nature of the threat environment, what we're going to go and see next year. Where does the responsibility sit for this type of risk? Because I think there's too much, and I suppose it's a bit of a leading question, because you and me know a lot of this sits with the CISO, but we're seeing more and more of the risk of the chief risk officer pop up in conversations involved with cybersecurity. What are your perspective on this? Or what is your perspective on that, given the conversations we're having in market?
The last couple of years have seen the compliance and regulatory obligations of the market really step up. So again, examples like notifiable data breach reporting, etc. So there's ultimately a fiduciary duty on the management, the board, the executive of organisations to ultimately step up and enhance their security controls. What does that mean then from the organization? I'm pretty confident if you go into the ASX 200, for instance, or NASDAQ organizations in the US, many of them will have cybersecurity risk registers now in place, and those risk registers will be reviewed every month by the board. Ultimately, that risk register falls under the owner of risk. So absolutely, you're right. The risk manager, the risk management side of cyber, is definitely a significant change, and I'm certainly seeing a lot of the strategy, a lot of the investment, a lot of the focus in cyber. Yes, comes from the CIO, the traditional forms of protection, but the role of the risk team in ensuring mitigation defense strategies are in place and remediation rectification strategies are in place as well. So yeah, the risk manager is definitely a focus.
Like we do with all of our guests, where, if anyone wants to speak to you more about any of the topics and points you've made today, is the best place to find you? And any closing comments you may have in that regard too?
Definitely find me on my email. So it's michael.warnock@doctree.com. You can find me on LinkedIn or on Twitter. And feel free to reach out anytime and have a chat around observations, requirements, etc., how we can assist on the journey and some of those insights. So more than happy to help.
That's all we have time for this week in Identity Today with me, Blair Crawford. I'd like to say a big thank you to our guest, Michael, as well as a big thank you to you, our listeners. If you want to know more about what we do at Doltree, head to doltree.com.